So today, my dear brothers and sisters, we're going to begin a series of homilies. And so this is by way of introduction of saying that the next couple of weeks, the homilies are going to be longer. And so it's okay. The world will not end. Mass will still end within 3 hours. And you'll still be fine. You'll get home in time. It's Sunday. We're not going anywhere anyway. No. But so the homilies will be a little longer. Bear with us. But this is an important series. It's a series that we did 2 years ago during the season of Advent, and we're going to revisit now during the season of Lent, and it's based on Father John Ricardo's book Rescued. And I highly recommend that you read it. We should all keep by our nightstand a book for spiritual reading, and this would be one of the books that would be good to read for your spirit. And it's based on the gospel and what the second reading of Timothy was talking about, the good news of the gospel. And Father Ricardo, in a very succinct and in a very easy way, has boiled down the gospel into four words, which probably you remember because we've repeated a lot. He summarized the gospel in four words, which is created, captured, rescued, and response. And today we're going to do a homily on created. And in this moment, I'm going to ask that we pray and that we ask for the gift of wonder and awe, to stand in wonder and awe of God. As we listen to this homily, as we listen to the words of the Holy Spirit, and as we contemplate who God is. And one of the best ways to start off understanding this word created is to ask ourselves some very fundamental questions that needs an answer anyway, and it's questions that we should be asking ourselves and answering every so often, which is the main question is, why is there something rather than nothing? Why am I here? Not me here, but why do I exist? That kind of why am I here? Where am I going? How do I get there? Now, these questions beg an answer. But in order to answer these questions, there are first a couple of things that we have to understand. In order to know why we're here, why there's something rather than nothing, why we're here, where are we going, and how do I get there, we have to understand ourselves in a story. Now, I'm sure you've all heard of the book Dante's Inferno. It's another book that I highly recommend, and it played a very important role in my own spiritual understanding and also my own seminary formation. I was maybe a year or 2 years into the seminary and was looking for something to read, and came across Dante's Inferno, which is kind of when I picked it up off the shelf, I thought, I won't be able to read this. But I started it, and it took me 3, 4, or 5 months to read because it's big. But what what I really took away from Dante's Inferno, of course, it's not a historical book, but it is a way of describing the different levels of hell. And you say, well, Father, that's really dark. Don't you think that's kind of dark? Yeah, it's a little dark. But if you read Dante's Inferno and you read about the different levels, you see exactly where sin can take us. Like, there's the level of hell for those who are proud, who never give up their pride, and those people are condemned for eternity to be now of course when this to be in stockade, looking at their belly button. That's their whole eternity. Now that kind of gives us it's a dark view, but it helped to form my understanding of the seriousness of sin. But anyway, why do I say this? Because you should read the book if you haven't already. But there is this author, Rod Dreher, who wrote a book on Dante's Inferno, in which and it caught my attention because of the name of the book. And you don't think of Dante this way, but it is very true. The name of the book is How Dante Can Save Your Life. And you don't, when you think of Dante's Inferno, you don't think of it saving anybody's life. But it does have a strong ability to make you think before you sin. Because who wants to spend eternity looking at their belly buttons in a stockade? Because we didn't work in our life to take away pride. So anyway, but this book, he reads Dante in light of his own life, there are many things that go on in his life, many difficulties with his family and losing his wife to cancer, and there's a whole story in which he was faced with the question of who God was and how did God play in his life. But so I recommend that you read this. If you're not a big, you don't want to take on Dante, take this book on, and it's a good introduction. But anyway, in this book, Rod, he speaks about the importance of knowing our story. And he says, stories tell us how to think and what to do. They teach us what to love, what to fear, what to hope for, and whom to trust. Stories reveal to us how we differ from others and how we are the same. They tell us where we come from, where we stand, and where we are going. Stories impose order to chaos. From grand cosmic myths to intimate family tales, it is in stories that we find meaning, purpose, and the truths by which we live, or if we are worldly, the lies that led us astray. He continues to say, if we do not understand ourselves as part of a greater story or tradition, we will not know what to do with our lives. And this is something that we should be able to relate to, because we all come from families, and our families made... brought order to chaos or brought understanding to us by telling us stories. It's how our families explained how we got here. Maybe you know your family history of how your family came over from Europe to the United States, or because your family tells those stories as a way to make sense, because the story is important. Now more than ever, now we dig deeper into our genealogy. Why? Because we want to know where we come from. What is our story? To kind of illustrate this, I want to kind of tell a little bit my story that was handed down to me In my own family, from my father, and it was handed down to him by his father. And now, the historical truth of the story, I don't buy. But it's possible. It's possible. I don't buy it, but it's possible. But it was a story that they told in order to make sense of their lives. And what do I mean by that? To understand this, you have to understand a little bit, and some of you know this and some of you don't. So my father was born on the island of Puerto Rico. They were seven siblings. There were six girls, and he was the youngest boy. And they were born into a poverty that we don't understand here. So that we have no reference to here. So my father grew up in a three-room shack. When I say a shack, you would have to see it to really believe me. It was, and up to a few years ago, my understanding, up to a couple of years ago, it was still standing. The shack was, they had preserved the shack. It was still standing. But when I say shack, I mean shack. It was dirt floors. It was really one room that they kind of tried to make into three rooms. And so he grew up in such poverty that at the age of seven, he was running away from home because he didn't want to take food from his sisters. He wanted his sisters to be able to eat. And so he spent his life roaming the island of Puerto Rico. This is the... in this kind of poverty, it was very hard for them to grow up in. And I think that this is where this story comes from, and that's why I doubt the historical truth, but it is possible. Because as a way to understand their situation of poverty, the story goes as follows, is that my father's family, my grandparents, their parents are not originally from Puerto Rico. Rather, the family comes from the Canary Islands, and that they were doing at that time what a lot of Europeans were doing, which is they were coming to the States for a better life. Meanwhile, what happened on this trip from the Canary Islands is that a storm, and not only were they coming for a better life, but they were coming because they were very wealthy, and so they were bringing their wealth with them. So this is why I'm not so sure about this story. But anyway, and so they brought all of their gold with them, and what happened was as they were coming here to the States, a great storm arises, and the ship sinks with all the money. The only thing that they're able to escape with is their lives, and they escape. They escape on the beaches of Puerto Rico. Now, this is why I don't necessarily believe the story. I think it was a way for his father to try to explain why they were in poverty. But it could be true. My father believed this story up until the last days of his life. He was combing beaches in Puerto Rico with metal detectors, still swearing that he could find the treasure of his family that was lost. But to my father, this story, this is how they brought order to their chaos. This is how they helped the family understand their situation. And so that was just to illustrate that where we come from, the stories our family tells are important because they tell us who we are. Now, what happens is that there are two ways we can look at the world. We can look at the world with a story, or we can look at the world without a story. And in our modern world, we have lost sense of the story. And we've lost sense of the story for a very important reason, because we have removed God. And when you remove God, let's not fool ourselves, this has been done methodically. The removal of God from society did not just happen overnight. God has been removed from society little by little. But when you remove society, because what is the saying? Nature abhors a vacuum, right? Is that the saying? Nature abhors a vacuum. Because nature abhors a vacuum, when you remove God, you've got to fill that vacuum. And so how does that vacuum get filled? It gets filled with a worldview. And it gets filled with the worldview of the following. Since God doesn't exist, you better maximize happiness and minimize suffering. Because suffering bad, happiness good. But what is happiness? Because when we remove God, anything goes, because you got to fill it with something and everything becomes okay. And we see this happening in our world. More and more with the methodical removal of God, we fall more and more into trying to fill that vacuum by doing what we want. So much so that we have come to the point that there is no longer an objective truth. Truth has become totally subjective. There is no longer a moral right. Because why have a moral right? If God doesn't exist, then what is right, what is true, is what I think is true. And this is happening in our schools. This is happening to our children. That truth is being, that they are being fed with untruths. And a lot of times this has happened and we've allowed it to happen under our noses. That's a separate homily. But it's true that when we look at things, when we look at the world in the worldly view, we can be eaten up by that view. We can lose the sense of who we are. And we can fall into that kind of thought that my real happiness is that this world is a jungle. Nobody's going to do anything for me, so it's either kill or be killed. I have to work for my happiness and no matter what stake. And so everything becomes about me, what I want, what I need, and this is exactly how the world sees itself. And this is what it is to look at the world with a worldly view. A world without God. But there is another way to look at the world, which is through the eyes of the Bible, through a biblical worldview. And this is why I was asking and we're praying for this gift of wonder and awe. And in order to understand the biblical worldview, our best place to look is at the book of Genesis, at the story of creation. And of course, this is not a historical account of creation. Okay, nobody was sitting there with a book writing down what God did as God did it. This is a way, the Genesis is a way of saying God created. That's the most important part. That's what Genesis is trying to get across. And that when God created, when he said it, it was. So, and one of the days, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. He called the light day, and the darkness he called night. Then he said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. And God made the firmament. It separated the waters, which were under the firmament from the waters that were above the firmament. And God called the firmament heaven. And there was evening and morning a second day. And when God looks at creation, Every time God creates, he sees it as good. If you read the first chapter of Genesis, it says it 8 times. When God created, he said, and God saw that it was good. Because God, when God creates beauty. But there is one of these, in one of these days, in which, and it says, and God made the 2 great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. Then it makes a 5 word sentence. He made the stars also. And this is, that's a very powerful statement. I don't know if you've if you notice, but that's a 6 billion star statement. He made the stars also. There are something like 6 billion or 6 trillion, 600 billion, I don't know, stars. It's amazing. I didn't see this, but because of, I think, some ion storms that were happening or something, the northern lights were visible here in Colorado, which is something that barely happens. I don't know if anybody, did anybody see it? I know Patrick saw it, but I didn't see it. But anyway, so at least last week for 2 nights in the middle of the night, the northern stars were visible. The northern lights were visible. You probably read in the newspaper, because of all of this, there was a flight flying in Norway that the flight turned around so that the passengers could see the northern lights because it was so beautiful. This is just to say that when you look at creation, it should make us to be in awe of God. When you look at the stars, I had this sense when last year, I went to a cruise to Alaska, and for the first time in my life, I was actually there when a glacier calved. I mean, it's so impressive. Creation is so impressive, and we don't have to go to Alaska or far away to do it. We can just look out our back window here. And we should be amazed at creation and at the beauty of creation and at how big God is. But in all of that creation, so God creates, and then at the end he says, then God said, now as the culmination of creation, he said, then God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over the cattle and over the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. So as culmination to creation, what does God do? God creates man. But God doesn't just, when he creates man, he creates man, he says, let us create man in our image and our likeness. That is, in the likeness and image of God. We are created with dominion, with the ability to have dominion over creation. We make God present on earth. We were created with reason. We were created with the capacity for free choice. And in Genesis worldview, in the biblical worldview, because when God creates us and sees us as good, we see that God creates out of love. That is, my dear brothers and sisters, you and I were created real happiness. We were created to be loved and to love. Now, this statement is, what does that mean? It means a lot. I don't know if you know this, but Colorado is the third highest state for the suicide rate in the country. Now, there are a lot of mental illnesses out there, but let's understand, Colorado is the third highest state in the country for suicide. Why is there such a pandemic of sadness? There's a pandemic of sadness because we have removed God. And if we remove God and we create a vacuum and happiness is about me, then we are not able. We're never happy. Have you ever noticed that about yourself? You're never happy. You're impossible. It's impossible to please yourself. And this is why there is such a sadness. Yes, there are many mental illnesses, but this is why there's such a sadness. Because we have lost the fact that we are created to be loved by God. And in turn, we are created to love the other one. That is why, that is the beauty of creation. And Genesis understands that there is only one God. And that when God created us, not only did he just create kind of the massive conglomerate that is mankind, but God created me, God created you, God knows us each by name. You matter, I matter to God. This is the beauty of creation, and that when God created, he created man and woman with an equal dignity. And the end of creation, the purpose of creation, is for each one of us was created to be divinized. That is, to put on eternal life. We were created for heaven. We were created for God, we were created by God, and we were on our way back to God. And it's important, my dear brothers and sisters, that we really ask for this gift of wonder and awe to understand the vastness of God's creation. And so I want to go back to the questions that we began with, which is, why am I here? We're here because God created. God created us to be here. We are meant to be here. Where are we going? Because we're created in the image of God, we are going back to God. We are meant to share in God's life. How do we get there? We get there by responding to the love that God has had for us. Only with God does our story make sense. Only with God are we able to answer where we come from and where we're going. And this is what in what Rod Dreher means when he's speaking about the story, and he says, we find meaning, purpose, and the truth by which we live when we understand our story. My dear brothers and sisters, God is the purpose of our life. We were created, we were created for God, and I invite you, in this week, to just spend some time with creation. Find a moment. And just, maybe it's even park your car along LeMay and contemplate the mountains. Just find a moment to contemplate the creation and to ask the Lord to help us to stand in awe of God. Next week, we're going speak about Captured. And to kind of forewarn you, it's a little bit on the darker side, but it's important. In order to understand the good news, we have to understand the bad news. So my dear brothers and sisters, let us... we have our first scrutiny. So sorry, I was short. Don't judge me. You're judging me. Don't judge me. You're sitting there and you're judging me.